It is good to have you with us on the Big Sports Breakfast this morning. We always love those play-ons. What about
what was the last one?
Well, Nick Kunyak is our panel operator this week, and so he has the opportunity to edit up who we hear in those promos.
That's fair enough.
He's put himself in there.
You can't put yourself in there if you're the panel operator. It's an outrage.
Good on you, Nick. Nothing like a bit of free advertising for yourself, is there? It's great to have you with us on the Big Sports Breakfast. Jamie Rogers, Dean Ritchie, Ryan Phelan filling in for the team. They will be back on Monday. Jared Middleton, Laurie Daly and Michael Clark. So the boys earning a well-earned rest this week. We were just talking to Bass, weren't we, Bulldog, before the break, and he raised some points about the unfairness of the NRL draw. Well, it's ignited a lot of interest on the text line. This one, Bass is right. NRL is the only major competition in the world that doesn't have a draft outside of the EPL, so the weaker teams simply get worse by the way the draw is done right now. That's from Cal in Bathurst. Another one, this one from DK. Regarding the draw, why doesn't the NRL have teams who finished in the bottom eight the previous season play each other twice and only play the teams from the top eight in the previous season once? This would allow for a more even competition and give the teams at the bottom a chance to push for the finals. It will also benefit the TV networks as the top eight from the previous season would play each other twice. That was DK. This one from Richard. What about Bass calling up to bag an unfair draw? Then his solution is to manipulate the draw to make it unfair for the top team. Wow, that's from Richard. This one as well, unnamed. We need more English teams in our comp so they can, or English players so they can adapt to stronger competition. So a lot of interesting feedback coming there. And as you pointed out, there's a lot of solutions. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with who's paying the bills, and that's the broadcaster. So we are beholden to what the broadcaster wants.
Yeah, I just think with Bass, well, one of his solutions, excuse me, to for the bottom sides to play each other more often than the top sides, that is actually detrimental to the top sides. They are being penalised then because they are facing each other for being successful. Mm. Why are they being penalised for being successful and the weaker clubs are being rewarded by playing fellow weaker teams more, so they're being rewarded for being weak? Mm. You know, it shouldn't be that. That to me just doesn't make sense. Mm. It's a difficult debate. But as for that promotion relegation run, we were talking off air. You know, who would the broadcaster, for example, would they cover all the games in Tier 2?
Yeah,
you know, there's that fear in tier two that they could slide away, and if you're not in the top tier, it's a worry, and it's hard to get back in there.
Yeah, there seemingly is no simple solution. Adam Pengelly is joining us from the Sydney Morning Herald. Adam, I don't know whether you have any thoughts on the draw and the perceived unfairness by certain clubs. Good morning.
Hey, Ryan. Morning, guys. I struggle to get my head around it, Ryan, to be honest. We've seen it so many times already this year. Teams playing each other twice in the space of 4 or 5 weeks. Was it Parramatta and the Gold Coast played each other twice in the first 5 rounds this year, or first 6 rounds? Well, just something that was just crazy. I actually have spoken to the NRL about this very briefly in the past. And they use some Canadian company who has these whiz-bang software technology that helps them put together the draw. And there's a lot of different variables that go into it. I don't think it's as simple as what people think, but I still can't get my head around the fact that we have teams playing against each other so closely in the space of a season. I was just looking at the draw for, say, the Raiders and the Dragons yesterday. So obviously, they're going to be two teams fighting out for those couple of bottom spots in the top eight. Well, they play each other this weekend, and they're playing each other again another 4 or 5 weeks again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Adam, because if you play a team in round one, it's obviously going to be a very different team to the one you play in round 15, 16.
Yeah, exactly. 100%, Ryan. I don't know whether we go back to I don't think we ever will go back to that model where you just play each other once in the competition and that's it, because there won't be enough rounds for the broadcast of the NRL to satisfy the criteria they want. But surely we can work on some sort of system where you have to play every other team in the competition once to go through one full round. So that's when the Dolphins come in next year, obviously 17 teams. You play the other 16 teams all once, and then play the other teams twice again, say half those other teams to finish out the rest of the year. I think that's got to be a solution the NRL works towards, but for whatever reason, they can't seem to go down that path at the moment. So we'll just have to put up with it. I heard Doggy say those comments for the 7 o'clock news that a lot of coaches, their careers, live and die by the strength of some of the draws they have to face in a particular season. And I agree with him, but I do not know, like most things in rugby league, if there's a perfect solution. Mm.
Adam, let's talk about last night where Manly recorded that 36-30 upset win over Melbourne. What did you make of, in particular, the Storm's performance? I know they sort of clawed their way back at the end, but it was just too late.
Can anyone explain to me what happened in that last 6-7 minutes?
Well, you probably just have to go back to the Cowboys game the other week to understand it when they actually lost.
Well, that was worse last night, Ryan. That was worse last night because they conceded 4 tries in the space of 6 minutes. I know they lost that game against the Cowboys. You can say that their collapse there was worse, but that was comical last night what happened after, like, you know, obviously Josh Schuster offside from the kickoff, then Cherry put the next kickoff out on the full. It was just absolutely bizarre. I think obviously Manly were a much better team last night for the majority of the game. And that was probably as bad as I've seen Melbourne play for a long time for that first 60 minutes. They were really, really ordinary. And I love the fact that Craig Bellamy came out in his post-match press conference straight away. He didn't mince his words and gave it to his players. And a very pointed comment towards some of his representative players saying that the club's culture and the club's history is if players pride themselves on backing them after Origin games. If that's not a massive swipe for some of these players who played in Origin or in the New Zealand Tonga Test last week, well, then I don't know what is, because they were extremely disappointing. They'll get their season back on track, obviously. Manly, huge win, wasn't it? Massive win for them in the context of their season. Just keeps them in that fight for the top eight. They're back into the top eight at the moment on for and against, pending results later in the weekend with the Dragons and that Raiders game. And to be fair, that was great. I think if Brad Fittler was sitting on the sideline last night, guys, he would have taken a lot of notice or close notice of Daly Cherry-Evans. That whole game turned in the first half on that 40-20 he kicked, and then Manly had all the momentum after that, and he was brilliant afterwards. So I know a lot of people might be writing Queensland off after game two, but what Cherry produced last night should be a warning shot across the bows of all the New South Wales players that they're riding the fight for this game three up there in Brisbane at Suncorp Stadium.
Adam, you talk about Manly. What's the latest on Manasi Fainu?
Yeah, I found this a bit of an interesting story, Doggy, that Manly have virtually given him an offer for an extra 2-year deal, and he's agreed to it, pending he can get off these charges in court, obviously relating to the stabbing at a Mormon church dance, if I get that right, eventually, going back the space of 3 years. So he's been pretty much the forgotten man in the NRL for a number of years now, hasn't played for a very long time. Manly have stood by him. They've given him a train and trial deal to be able to keep him with the club, but I thought they'd at least wait and maybe see him come back and play a few games of lower grades if he is cleared from these criminal charges. He's due to go to trial next month, obviously, so hopefully we'll get some sort of outcome on that in the next couple of months. His shoulder's probably a big issue as well, Doggy, I think, from all reports. He's had multiple shoulder surgeries over the course of the past couple of years to try and get that right. But Manly at this stage are showing a huge show of faith and giving him that 2-year deal to continue his career if he can beat those charges.
Cameron Ciraldo, we seem to talk about his name more than some players at the moment as far as an assistant coach is concerned. Is there any developments with him? Obviously missing out on the he rejected the West Tigers offer the other week. Has there been any developments?
Yeah, this is a fascinating one, Ryan, because they're working towards another 1-year deal to stay at Penrith. But the word I was getting yesterday, and obviously Brent Reed and Michael Carrianos wrote about in the Telegraph today, is that Penrith are not going to shut the door on him leaving for another club at the end of the season if he so desires. Now, what jobs might come up? Well, potentially probably none, if we're being honest. But if there's turmoil at Newcastle or the Dragons suddenly fall off a cliff towards the end of the finals, we don't know what's going to happen with their coaching situations with Adam O'Brien and Anthony Griffin. And Penrith are quite happy to say to Cameron, listen, you can sign that 1-year deal, but if your mind changes in the next couple of months and you want to take a job for a club in 2023, you can do that, which would probably be a bit of a, I suppose, a slap in the face to maybe the Tigers and even the Bulldogs if he does do that, because he's definitely told the Tigers he won't be going there. I don't think the Bulldogs have tabled him an offer. It doesn't seem like he'll be going there either. But his situation probably hasn't quite come to any finality at this stage, so definitely a watch this space. We'll see how it plays out. But it's firming that Cameron Ciraldo will be at Penrith next year, but Penrith haven't completely closed on the door and leaving for another club before the end of before the start of next pre-season.
Well, Adam, we've been speaking about Origin, the decider, quite extensively with the final game on July 13. Any latest news on some Origin teams?
Yeah, just firstly on Queensland. Did you guys hear Craig Bellamy talk after the game last night about Cameron Munster?
No, what did he say?
Yeah, he said that his shoulder wasn't too bad. He said he's actually close to playing last night, which I found quite remarkable given the scenes we saw over there at Optus Stadium. So that all goes well for him going to camp for Queensland, having a pretty unrestricted camp under Billy Slater for the week leading up to Game 3. I thought he would have been in some sort of doubt. He would have thought for Game 3 that Craig Bellamy confirmed last night he's going to be okay. Still this situation with Felice Kifusi, we don't have any more clarity on yet. Obviously making that mercy dash to the US, a horrible situation to be by his father's bedside after he suffered that really nasty injury on holiday and a bad infection in his leg. So I'd assume he might be back at some stage of it next week, but no confirmation on that. What do you do with David Fifita and Jairo, guys? Obviously, if Jairo was in the team for Game 2, he did a I suppose, a serviceable job off the bench. David Fafita's got to get through a game for the Titans this week. I think the smoky might be Jaden Stewart from the Dragon. He's been at Origin level before for Queensland. He's obviously had that long injury after Anzac Day when he had a syndesmosis injury. He was in great form for the Dragons in the first 7 or 8 weeks of the season. He made his comeback, I think, last week and looked pretty good. I think he might be the guy that could come back to that Queensland team if Billy Slater needed another back rower.
Adam, I spoke to Bellyache on Wednesday night, and he did tell me that the Storm medical staff were very confident that Munster would, in fact, be available for Game 3. Tonight, Penrith Roosters. You would think that Penrith would be raging favourites. They are raging favourites, but given all those players, more than 20 Penrith players played in the rep round, is this the night, perhaps, as JR suggests, that the Roosters can cause the ball over to kickstart their season?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit closer than a lot of people are anticipating, Doggy. You just by sheer volume of those players backing up from Penrith from rep round last week. And don't forget, the Roosters have got a fair few guys back up as well, at least three from the New South Wales team that played Origin last week, plus Lindsay Collins from the Queensland side. The Roosters have got to get a season going at some stage, don't they, Doggy? They've been really flat, I'd say, for the last month or so. And you suspect they're going to click into gear at some stage, but the clock's ticking, isn't it? Well, we've got 9 games to go. They're sitting outside the top 8. I still think they'll make the top 8, but obviously I think the top 4 probably might be a little bit beyond them at this stage. Maybe Joey Manu going to the halves is going to really, really fire them up and get them going again. I think he just needs to get his hands on the ball. He's been in outstanding form the last 5 or 6 weeks. We saw him play at fullback for the Kiwis last week. What I would love to see is, if he does play in the centres, playing more as that second fullback role alongside Teddy and floating to the other side of the field when the ball sort of shifts out to that left-hand side of the field, because he's just so dangerous. The Roosters got to find a way to get his hands on the ball a little bit more. So that combination with Sam Walker tonight, it'll be fascinating to see how it goes. I'm tipping Penrith to win this game, but I expect it to be a lot closer than what a lot of judges are suggesting.
Adam, do you think any side can come home with a wet sail late in the year, outside of the top two, and give Parramatta this competition a shake?
Yeah, Parramatta.
Just one?
Yeah, I think so. I know the Cowboys have been absolutely fantastic this year, and they've completely surprised me. And I think the way it stands at the moment, they're a legitimate top four team. They're the team I expect to make the top four. I think Parramatta's a team that could trouble Penrith and Melbourne and win the comp. And I know a lot of people say, well, how can you say that about a team that's lost to the Tigers this year, they've lost to the Bulldogs this year? If they get their head screwed on, they're fit and healthy, they can do some damage in the finals. I think they need to make the top four. I don't think they want to be trying to do it from outside the top four and having to win sort of 4 games straight to take the title. But if they can make the top four, I'm pretty sure that Penrith or Melbourne probably wouldn't want to be playing them in the first week of the finals, because they've beaten both those teams away from home this year. So they've had a limited Origin representation, and put it in those terms. Obviously, Regan Campbell-Gillard and Ryan Madison played game one, but Junior Paolo's been basically their only player that's been a staple throughout the series. So I think they're just going to try and time their run this year, get the momentum right, which they haven't done in previous years, and they're the team I think can make a run at the title.
Well, hearing your thoughts on Parramatta, you're obviously tipping them to beat a Latrell Mitchell returning Rabbitohs this Saturday.
Yeah, the game I'm most looking forward to this weekend, Ryan. What do we expect from Latrell? Will he get through 80 minutes on Saturday night playing fullback? Like, he looks fit. He looks great from the vision I've seen. Speaking to one or two people around South, he seems to be in a really great headspace, but it's a big ask to get through 80 minutes at fullback after, what is it, 12, 13 weeks?
I reckon he'll be doing everything he can to get through 80 minutes, but yeah. I reckon South will be happy to rest him. It's funny, isn't it? Because they've long said that they want him for the back end of the year, but I'm sure Latrell will want to be playing Origin 3 and be putting his best foot forward.
Yeah, and South need to win games as well, Ryan. Don't discount that factor. They've got a ridiculously hard draw to finish the last 8 or 9 weeks of the season. They're no guarantee to make the top 8. So they don't want to be busting Latrell on his first game back, but they really need the 2 competition points as well just to stay in the top 8. So I don't know. I think he'll try and get through as long as he possibly can at fullback. If he blows out late, They might try and shift him into the centres or even take him off and have someone else play fullback like a Blake Taff or Cody Nicarima. So interesting to see how it sort of plays out. But I cannot wait to see Latrell back in action on Saturday night.
Now, I'm looking at the Rose Hill rating at the moment. It's a good 4. But I'm looking out the window and it's raining. The rain is back in Sydney. So that good 4 is certainly doubtful. How does that affect your form tomorrow? And what have you got for us?
It's a nightmare, Ryan, trying to do the form for this meeting. We could be anything from a soft 6 or soft 7 to a heavy 10, the way it stands at the moment with the forecast. Lots and lots of rain forecast for tomorrow in Sydney, all around Sydney. So I'd be surprised we're not on a heavy track. I've tried to find a couple of heavy trackers, but it's just a dart job there meeting tomorrow. Wait until we see what the conditions are like. I've got race 5, number 8, Petulant, my best bet on the program. I like this filly, the way she's going about her business for the Hawks stable. A couple of really nice runs so far this campaign in what must be said probably weaker grade, but she gets through wet tracks. obviously Willie Pike riding from a wide escape, he'll settle up somewhere near the speed. And just being away from that ruck and near the fence might be a good thing there tomorrow, given the truck's going to be chopped out. I have lots of respect for Buren Baker's really nice unbeaten filly Shades of Rose, but just with the fitness edge, I'm willing to side with Petulance. That's race 5, number 8, Petulance. The best bet on the program.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that, Adam. Yeah, tricky day tomorrow. 10 races on the card at Rose Hill. A good 4 at the moment, but as Adam mentioned, it could be anything as far as track rating is concerned. Fortunately, our BSB multi, he's smart blocker. See, Loz has always been taking on these heavy tracks with his multi, and blocker's going down to Flemington with Tuvalu. So he's avoided the tricky circumstances there tomorrow. Mind you, it's still a soft 6 at Flemington.
Do you reckon Blocker's got more idea than Laurie?
Well, it's not hard, is it?
It's
not hard.
Hang on, he's had one win. I'm just going to defend Laurie a little bit here. He's had one win, so we can have this debate if Blocker gets up the multi.
I'm going to talk behind his back. I think Blocker should do it every week.
Well, when you come in on Wednesday, when you come back into the show on Wednesday morning, you can make sure you give it to Loz that Blocker has
well,
either potentially done two.
Well, if this gets up at $11, there's got to be some serious conversations.
He will be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Adam, thanks for joining us, mate, and enjoy your footy this weekend. There's plenty of terrific games in your racing as well. We'll chat to you next week.
See you guys. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, mate.
Adam Pengelly joining us from the Sydney Morning Herald. We want you to be part of the show, 1353 53, the SMS line as well, 0419 767 272. In this next half hour, we're going to be talking to Roger Rashid about Wimbledon. And just recapping that Wimbledon result, which finished only in the last half hour, Alex de Minaur, the 19th seed, the Aussie, is through over Jack Draper. He lost the first set, 7-5, but then he went through 7-6, 6-2, 6-3. So he is into the third round. And some good results for the Aussies overnight. Nick Kyrgios, he won in straight sets. Jason Kubler, he's a game away from finishing in straight sets over Denis Novak. Bad light stop play there. Jordan Thompson lost in straight sets to Stefanos Tsitsipas, who now plays Nick Kyrgios. Isla Tomljanovic, she also went through in straight sets. So all in all, a pretty good night for the Aussies, and we'll talk to Roger Rashid. Brad Davidson will be giving his best for Rose Hill this weekend, and hopefully we can get a couple of tips at Flemington as well, which might be on a better surface. Kevin Anderson will join us after 8 o'clock with a special announcement on the Kosciuszko. And don't forget, the Kosciuszko tickets are on sale now. So you can actually win a share of $1.3 million just with one $5 ticket, but you can buy as many as you like. Now, they're available on the Tab app. So you can buy those tickets on the Tab app. You can get them at the local pub, club or TAB agency at an EBT machine as well. So 14 winning ticket holders will be drawn on September 8th. So you can go to the website, thekosciuszko.com.au, and we'll be talking to Kevin Anderson about that after 8 o'clock. Gary the Wiz Freeman will join us, a legend of rugby league as well, and Phil Moss, all still to come on the Big Sports Breakfast. Speaking of the scoreboard, some nice results for the Australians overnight at Wimbledon. We'll talk with Roger Rashid in just a moment. But, oh, the smell of Garlow's pies is wafting through the studio at the moment. Deliciously flaky pastry on top, a bottom which is rolled extra thin, a filling of 100% lean Aussie beef. Yes, I'm talking about Garlow's pies, the only pies that you should be putting on your plate. Garlow's pies are simply bursting with flavour. There's heaps of flavours to choose from. Here's a thought. Take a night off from cooking and grab a Garlow's pie for the whole crew. They're available at Coles and Woolworths stores. Remember, they are located in the chilled meats section. You can find us by name, Garlow's Pies. And yeah, if you get them from the chilled meats section, if you've got an air fryer, it's the perfect way to cook a Garlow's pie. They're beautifully fresh and crispy. Garlow's pies, they're thin on pastry, they're big on meat, and they smell fantastic. And you were asking before, how early is to eat a pie?
What's... Is 7 o'clock in the morning too early to have a pie? I don't think it is, personally.
You have been up since 4, so...
Correct. So if you get up at 7, it's about 11 o'clock. It's morning tea.
Yeah.
We eat other pastries in the morning.
Exactly.
Why not a pie?
You know what? When you guys came back in the studio, I quickly scoffed one down.
You scoffed one down?
Yeah, I did. It was beautiful too.
Sauce or no sauce?
You know what I love? I love it actually when no one's around and you can really get into the pie without worrying about whether it's on your lip or you've spilled a bit down the front of your shirt. No one's actually judging you. You can just rip into it. at the right temperature, a bit of sauce, no one around. Oh, mama, I'm in.
Are you a beef, you're not beef one of these, pie or oh, you go a beef. Flavoured?
No, sorry, beef only.
You're not one of these guilt eaters, are you, that hides in a cupboard and scoffs down a, you know, when you're depressed and scoffs down a box of cookies?
I was hiding in the boardroom eating my pie a minute ago.
Good stuff. Well, as I mentioned, some great results for Australia in the tennis overnight at Wimbledon, and joining us to talk all about it this morning, once again joining us this week, is Roger Rashid. Good morning, Roger.
Morning, guys. How are you? I'm a bit hungry.
Yeah, I bet you are. Garlo's pies will make anyone salivate. Great result this morning. Alex Di Minori lost the first set but hung tough and won well. He was the last of the Aussies on court today.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, playing Jack Draper, who's from Great Britain, and so you don't know what you're going to get. He's a quality player. He plays at a good level. You're going to be obviously inspired by playing in your home city with the crowd behind you. And Alex found himself in a hole early. And I think the beauty behind that is what he's got a lot of calm about him. He's got some tennis under his belt. He's a point in, point out competitor. So every moment's an important moment to him. So he gives his 100% to that moment. So by dropping the first set, There's not a sign of desperation. There's not a fluctuation in his mentality and the way he's going to go about things when the first points starts in the second set. And that shows really through with Alex's game. And the second set was a tussle. There's no doubt about that. You get to a tie break. He wins that 7-love, and that's unusual on grass. But it just showed he was prepared to go after the ball and actually. And take the game to Draper, who, you know, two sets of love, you're in a pretty good position. And then after that, you sort of wind goes out of the sails of someone like Draper, who, when Alex is on the front foot, because he's very aggressive on the tennis court, looking to make things happen, stands on top of the baseline. So he strangles you a little bit, Alex, when things are going his way on the court because of his demeanour. And he did that in the third and fourth. So that was a real quality whole tennis match, losing the first, responding and accelerating at the end.
And Rog, Nick Kyrgios behaved himself and he said post-match he wanted to remind everyone that he's pretty good, and I think he definitely did that in the second round.
Yeah, look, it was impressive. It was a different type of day. The wind wasn't blowing, very still, so it was calm conditions and he's on a nice court, big crowd and it was the first time for a long time that you've watched Nick and it's been very, very silent. There was head down. He went to work really quickly in that tennis match. Krenovich is a good player. He's obviously the 26th seed. He's only the first time he's got to the second round on grass. Plays a steady game with zero weapons. He doesn't want to irritate you on the court. He's a little bit too vanilla for me on the tennis court because nothing changes up his side of the court. But Nick was everything about Nick and his skill set came out, and it was because he had a full application to virtually like what Alex was doing. Every point had its moment. It had a value. He was doing everything from his service, which looked sharp and accurate, to the way he moved on the tennis court. When he was at stretch, his extreme shots, he pulled those off with control. And then when he had his moments to accelerate, when he had his opponent on the back foot, he did that as well. So, you know, when you hit 50 winners, only 10 unforced errors in a tennis match and a bunch of aces, you're virtually unplayable. And that was Nick. And you know, he showed why he should have, he's potentially, he's a top 10 player. That's where his name, that's what number should be around his name. He jumps into this next third round match because he plays Stefanos Tsitsipas, who beat Jordan Thompson in straight sets, and that's this one's going to be a humdinger. This is the third round where you pull out the popcorn and you sit down and you look for the theatre, because there will be some. But I love the way Nick was calm, measured, and they pulled out of the doubles, him and Thanasi Kokkinakis. That was because he wanted to concentrate on singles. So that shows a different level of application to the tennis court and the tennis match and the environment that he's in now.
Roger, do you think Nick performs better when he is, as you just said, calm and composed? Or do you think he needs to fire up? He needs that siege mentality to get him into that frame of mind where he really rips in?
No, I liked what I saw yesterday, because you can still sort of, what you said, you can still fire up. but it's how you fire up. If it's in a negative vibe where you're aggressive to the box, aggressive to you're having a lot of dialogue with an umpire, you're doing all those things. Well, there's only one person that I know that ever did that well, and that was John McEnroe. And he was number one in the world at the time, so it showed his quality of tennis. And there was a time there where he was number one in singles and doubles, Nick. So, but I love Nick's ability when he's actually locked in. Yes, you can have some emotions on the court, and I'd love to see his emotion on the court. But when he's locked in and playing you up the other end, and only you point in and point out, wow, is he dangerous? I mean, it's extraordinary. It's just so dangerous, but. In this next round, he's got an opponent who has weapons. He's got different type of firepower. He's a top 10 player in the world. He's a Grand Slam finalist. And they've got history, these two. So there's been some history on some banter on social media and some commentary. And there's been a lot of history. And also Nick defeated him just recently.
Hull, wasn't it? And that was on grass as well. So I'm just looking at their record here. Nick has a 3-1 record over Tsitsipas, even though he's ranked 40 and Tsitsipas 5.
Yeah.
Most recently they met, he won on grass. And the only time that Tsitsipas has beaten him, that was on hard court at the Laver Cup in 2021, and he is actually favourite in this match. Kyrgios, $1.70, Tsitsipas, $2.10.
Yeah, he should be too. His game is definitely suited to this court. The way he hits his backhand, it's flat. He used it down the line beautifully. That's a real signature shot of his that opens the court. His serve, his serve's better. His weapons on a grass court are just generally better. And I think he'll expose Tsitsipas if he can stay locked in. And I'm sure he will, because this potentially will be a centre court match. I'd love them to put it on centre court, because there's some great shot making on both sides of the court. But I feel that on a grass court, Nick's got he's got some differentials there that do make him, as you said, the favourite in the match.
And Rog, Ilo Tomljanović, she's continuing to perform well. She's now through to the third round after downing American Catherine Harrison in straight sets. And if she can get through this next round, she'll likely face world number one Iga Świątek.
Yeah, the women's side of the draw is, the men's is shaping up as well. There's going to be a new semi-finalist in the top half of the draw in the bottom section. There's no player there that's been to the semi-finals. So on the men's side, we're going to get a new semi-finalist for sure at the end of the 2 weeks. On the women's side, we've got a lot of the big players that can win the major still in the draw. And as you said, Świątek's one of them. She lost the set. She struggled in the opening of her tennis match. She was down a break in the first set. She got through that, then lost the second, and then found herself in a really tricky position in the start of the third. But I was really impressed with how calm she was in that moment, 15-40 down on the first service game. And then she holds that and takes care of business and defends it and then pushes through a win 6-3. So 37 match winning streak. Isla is she's on her own winning streak, where she's actually hasn't dropped a set but played so pure. And, you know, she's got it. She's taken a really aggressive mentality to the grass court, which you need. And if you do that and you can get first strike of the ball and you hit it aggressively and accurately, you've got a lot of ability to control the way the game unfolds. And so she sets herself in an impressive way to take on Krejčíková, who's a 13th seed, who's a Czech player, who's aggressive. And this time she's got a little bit of firepower up the other end. So that will because you have a different view of the opponent up the other end, it might change your energy levels on how aggressive will you be. So hopefully Isla can stay as aggressive and stay, try and command when she has the opportunity. And if she gets to set up a match against Świątek, that'll be outstanding in the fourth round. But right now she's put herself in a good position. So too have a lot of other girls. I'm really excited to see what pans out in this women's side of the draw, because Simona Halep, Coco Gauff, who played incredibly well, didn't face a break point today. Anna Samova, young American, who had a big run at the Australian Open. Kvitova, who's a Grand Slam Wimbledon champion. There's so many players in it. Ostapenko, who's a French Open champion. So they're all in there in the third round. So the further you go with the big players, the big names, and the Seeds. It means they're finding their form really nicely on these courts, and you know, it looks like it shapes up to be a great draw.
So, Roger, I'm also hoping you can clear up for me. Jason Kubler, he looked like he was going to win his match in straight against Dennis Novak. He was 5-4 in the third, and play was suspended. But I noticed play was still going in the Demon Hall match, but there obviously are lights on the court that he was playing and not on the outside court, Court 16. Was that the case?
Yeah, so Centre Court and now Court 1 have a roof, so they shut the roofs and they can get on with things. And you know, as it got, it also got a little hairy out there, and there was so they suspended play. But you know, what a spot to be in. you'd probably like to kick on, wouldn't you? Like, come on, we've got a game. I've got four points to get. To get myself into a winning position. So. But it happens. I remember coaching Leighton one year. We had the same scenario. Had to come out and play a handful of games after playing. You know, into the fourth set and on court one as well. But they didn't have a roof at that stage. So what happens is you know instead of the day off where you can sort of mentally just sort of refresh and chill out and go through your own motions and just have a light hit, a recovery. You just the energy that you use to restart the engine again and get yourself in match mode. And you know, it can either be one game or it could be two and a bit sets. Mm. So you're preparing for a full tennis match. And just to go through that again is quite, and it takes a lot of energy out of you. But you've got to restart the engine pretty quick. And I'm sure, you know, when you're in a winning position and you've got a couple of sets under your belt, it's a lot better climate. To be waking up to than the opposing one.
Mm. Well, the way things are progressing at the moment with Ash Barty, we probably didn't have many high hopes with her not playing anymore of the Aussies going into the second week, but things are progressing nicely at the moment. We're not there yet, but so far so good, Rog, and hopefully we'll be talking about more Aussies when you join us on the Big Sports Breakfast next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. No, I think we're in for an exciting ride. Alex, you know, I can see him easily moving into a quarterfinals in his next two matches. So he's got a real big opportunity to win the next couple and make his way in the quarters. And don't see why Nick Kyrgios won't be there as his opponent. So we've got a bit of excitement to look forward to, I think.
Thanks, Rog. Enjoy, and we'll chat to you next week.
See you guys. Have a great weekend.
Roger Rashid joining us this morning. Brad Davidson is coming up next. Yes, as Jamie just said in that ad, $5 per ticket. Buy as many as you like for the Kosciuszko. 14 winning ticket holders will be drawn on September 8th, thekosciuszko.com.au. Go to the website, and we've got a special announcement coming up after 8 o'clock on the Kosciuszko with Racing Minister Kevin Anderson, who will join us. We've now got Brad Davidson joining us to talk all things racing. Good morning, Brad.
Yeah, morning, everyone. Looking forward to that announcement after 8.
Are you looking forward to potentially another wet track in Sydney, though? Oh, we thought we'd seen the back of them.
I know. When I heard the weather forecasters come out and say La Nina or El Nina, I always get it wrong, but whatever it's called is finished. I thought, you beauty, we might be in for a dry winter, and it's been pretty good to us lately. But yeah, it's coming back, isn't it, today? So I think I had a look at the on the weather apps, and they said around 6 mm of rain this morning at Rose Hill. So expecting that to intensify over the next 24 to 48 hours with the rain throughout today, and then obviously the bulk of it coming tomorrow, Sunday, Monday. So I'm not sure how next Wednesday's Warwick Farm meeting will be looking. But yeah, hopefully we get through tomorrow okay. But it does make it a bit tricky at this stage, because we just don't know how wet it's going to be. Obviously rain on race day just is one of those things, particularly this time of the year after the rain we've had and the lack of drying weather. It makes it really tricky. So I think they're predicting 35 to around 60 mil of rain tomorrow, which, yes, could be a bit nasty out there at Rose Hill. So we'll see how things eventuate. But look, the rail's out 8 there tomorrow. Generally, that would favour on-pace runners, but the rain will probably even that up a touch and might even suit those horses running on from the back. So the pattern's a bit up in the air, but we'll see how that all pans out tomorrow.
Brad, looking at tomorrow, Dee Andretti, she's a dual acceptor. Do you reckon she'll run in race two or in race three in the midway?
Yeah, I believe race two, Jamie, is what they're looking at. Ron Quinton just saying that the tempo of the race and the smaller field likely to head that way. I mean, I think they'll get a run in either race, because generally when we do have wet weather, we get a load of scratching. So But race two is the likely outcome there for Deanne Andretti tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see if they do run her as well, if we do get into that heavy range and the track's bottomless, if it is by that time of the day. So we'll see how that pans out. But at this stage, race number two for Deanne Andretti there tomorrow, punters, if you're looking at doing the form on those couple of races.
Now, in the last race, Why Ha Ha Falls, who was pretty impressive first up, winning, beating Fast Coney on that occasion. This is a horse that doesn't mind the wet track being by Sacred Falls, and it is the favourite. So looking to back up that impressive first-up victory.
Yeah, obviously Deanne Andretti's kind of the headline horse there tomorrow in terms of, you know, working out how good this filly is. But in terms of last start impressive winners, Wahaha Falls, to back that up, he was super impressive there at headquarters first up. He's got to do it at Rose Hill now with the rail at 8, but like you said, Ryan, I don't think the wet track will bother him too much. So I did hear John O'Shea on the radio during the week suggesting if they do draw wide, they might wait a week and wait for Randwick.
Oh, he hates a wide draw, John O'Shea.
Yeah, so we'll see how that pans out. I mean, he's drawn wide, but he hasn't drawn the car park. So we'll see what they do there. But favourite at this stage around that $3.80 mark, and does look hard to beat off that first up win where his sectionals were very impressive. Some of the best late splits of the day and the overall time of the race that the last 400 was about 5 lengths above average, so really good time on the race.
Mm. And Brad, just looking ahead at Monday to the trials at Warwick Farm, Profondo's down.
Yes, Profondo's down the trial on Monday. Obviously, we'll get these good horses start to filter through back through the trials. Normally a few weeks away still, but Profondo there, so maybe they've got some early season targets or early spring season targets, just getting him up and rolling for the early spring and try to pinch a few before maybe the big guns come back. So we'll see how it pans out, but looking forward to seeing him there at the trials on Monday, pending weather, of course.
Brad, you got anything for Wee Battlers?
Race 6, number 2 is my best there tomorrow, guys. Leap, I just think he sets up nicely. I was hoping for a bit of an on-pace sort of track there tomorrow. Might not play that way, but either way, he does find the lead. Two runs back, I think, have been pretty good for the Gerald Ryan and Sterling Alexia yard. And the big key there tomorrow is getting out in trip. I think he's been looking for 1,500 metres. He went close at this track and distance last preparation on a heavy 8 that day. And I just think he just controls the race out in front with Josh Parr, a good front-running rider, and happy to make him the best on what looks a tricky day just with the weather around, of course. So race 6, number 2, Leith will make the best there at Rose Hill tomorrow.
Currently $6.50 on Tab Fix. And the Sticky Wings multi is up on the Tab website at the moment as well. Blocker's back again this week trying to keep his 100% strike rate intact. He's gone the Roosters at the line, 15.5 start. And on Sunday, Raiders at the line, -2.5. You do the form for Flemington as well for Sky Channel, Brad. He's gone Tuvalu in race 8, number 12, to finish top 2.
One of the four races I haven't done yet. I'll do this morning, unfortunately. I've done the first 5, and then I've got another 4 to do this morning. But good last start win, just flying that horse, isn't it? So consistent, and top 2 seems pretty logical there because this horse never really misses a top 2 finish. So hopefully that's the case there tomorrow, guys.
Yep, ticks a lot of boxes, likes the track, doesn't mind the distance, doesn't mind the sting out of the ground as well. Lindsay Smith going well, Jared Fry flying. So that's Blocker's top 2 tip in the Sticky Wings multi, and Brad Davidson's best is Rose Hill Race 6, number 2. Lise, hopefully we don't get a bog track out there. Dave Owen, we can back a few winners. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, fingers crossed, guys. Thanks for having us, and have a great weekend.
Brad Davidson, of course, you'll see all of his tips and thoughts on Sky Channel every Saturday with Marto. So make sure you join in with the team this coming Saturday. We'll take a break. Plenty coming up in the next half hour on the Big Sports Breakfast. Kevin Anderson, Racing Minister, will talk a special announcement regarding the Kosciuszko. Gary the Wiz Freeman, a legend of rugby league, will be joining us in the next half hour as well, and Phil Moss to talk football. Still much more to come on the Big Sports Breakfast.